your source for everything paranormal.
Para-X.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Merry meet and merry part, bright the cheeks and warm the heart. For tread the circle thrice about, to keep unwelcome spirits out. Bide within the law you must, in perfect love and perfect trust. Mind the threefold laws you should, three times bad and three times good. These eight words the reed fulfill, and ye harm none, do what ye will.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, Merry Meet everybody, and welcome. Now, last week we talked with Nick Redfern about Mars and Martians, and this week is Preston Dennett's turn to talk about extraterrestrials and UFOs. The last time he came to visit, we talked about his book, UFOs at the Drive-In. And tonight we're going to hear about 25 true UFO encounters from one of his latest books called Wondrous. Now, Preston has investigated UFOs for the past 35 years. He has interviewed hundreds of witnesses and investigated a wild variety of paranormal phenomena. He's a field investigator for MUFON, a ghost hunter, a paranormal researcher, and the author of dozens of books and more than 100 articles on UFOs and the paranormal. He's appeared on numerous radio and television programs, including Coast to Coast and History Channel's Deep Sea UFOs and UFO Hunters, and his research has been presented in the LA Times, the LA Daily News, the Dallas Morning News, and other newspapers, and he's also taught classes on various paranormal subjects, and he lectures across the United States. So, questions and comments from the chat are always welcome, and so are people listening live outside the chat room. So, if you're one of them and you want to join us, make your way over to the ParaXRadioNetwork.com. And since we've got a really interesting hour ahead of us, Preston, you better jump in.
I'm here. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Like we were saying, kind of melting a little bit. It's a little bit warm. But see, that just kind of leads into something, because before we jump into the book, we've been talking in the chat room and with the people out of the chat room about the world's weather kind of going bonkers. I mean, Antarctica is like 112 or warm, and Siberia is 112, and Antarctica is warm. Today, Canada had something like 710,000 lightning strikes in 15 hours, and there's fires everywhere. The climate change is definitely changing, and in such an odd manner. So, in your opinion, is this just Mother Nature's climate change, or is Mother Nature getting an unwanted helping hand, or maybe a wanted helping hand, from extraterrestrials?
I think they've given us a warning. This is something they've talked about for a while, upcoming Earth changes. So I think this is not new to them. I don't think they're causing it. I don't think anything to do with it. I think we're just on a planet that is pretty rocky. Yes, I mean, I don't know what to call it. Yeah. I mean, it starts snowing here this summer.
I know. And the weather is
just all over the map.
I know. That's the scary part. So, you know, and some people might think that it has to do with UFOs and, you know, maybe they're doing it. But then I was talking to somebody else who said, well, if they are or whatever, maybe they're trying to help us, not hinder us kind of thing. And that kind of reminds me about, you know, your book on alien healing. You know, maybe they're not all bad, but it just came to mind that, you know, this is just, it's not humanly possible for us to be doing all this. So maybe somebody that's smarter than we are can. I don't know. You know, they talk about HARP also. I mean, you know, flip a coin.
Something's going on. Yeah, it's definitely something weird.
Okay, well, good. We all kind of agree with that. We're just waiting. I mean, you know, our mutual friend Mary Gaspero was saying that they've had really, really bad storms up in Pennsylvania. And black clouds, and yesterday there were these black clouds, and, you know, it ripped the siding off their garage or the house or something. And it keeps happening over and over again. And I joked with her, and I said, "Whoa, you see that black cloud? I think it could be that the mothership is hovering just right above there." But she didn't get that, didn't think it was funny. I thought it was funny. It was possible, but then I've watched too much Star Trek and Doctor Who and stuff to, you know, think, well, that is possible. All right, so let's go on to your book. You know, now, it's not a cookie-cutter book about UFO abductions like so many are, and there is a broad spectrum of different types of UFO contact, like onboard encounters, face-to-face meetings, bedroom visitations, healings, close-up sightings, telepathic stuff, a whole lot. Was it difficult to hone the book down to just 25 stories?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's always difficult. There's always some cases I'm not able to include that I want to include, but I got to include a lot in this one. So I'm pretty excited. I mean, whistleblower accounts, those are three of them that I've been wanting to include for a while. A really interesting USO account. I've done a bunch of research into unidentified submersible objects.
Yes.
This one USO account, I had to include it. It is so strange.
It was, and I remember like years ago when you were on the show, and I think we did a whole show about the USOs, and some of the bases, and some were like, you know, not too far from us in California, in Southern California. So it's all pretty interesting. You know, we've all heard stories about encounters, and you know. There's a lot of encounters in the book, but they're different. But the ones here where we're talking about the bedroom encounters, it's like they start talking, almost every one of them talks about paralysis, opening their eyes and seeing, you know, space people, aliens up there around them and stuff. Why is that so common, do you think?
Certainly is common, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the reasons is ETs know that humans are very fearful, have a strong fear response, and will lash out and, you know, fight first, ask questions later.
Mm-hmm.
Because this has happened. I've talked to many people who have had this. You know, they will jump up and strike the ETs.
Well, yeah.
This is why they do it, because, you know, the Greys in particular are not super muscular people. They're pretty delicate little things with skinny little necks and really thin limbs. They're not physically strong.
But they're supposed to be idiot mean.
Well, there's all different types. I will say that. There's definitely a bell curve there of types of encounters. All the way from very negative to very positive.
So basically, they're just doing it as a protection thing, although you would think that they would be able to protect themselves.
Yeah, well, that's how they do it.
Well, that makes sense. But, yeah, I just thought maybe, you know, they could, like, zap somebody or something if they had to.
Which they will. They will. They carry their little wand, you might say.
Well, damn it, if they have a wand that zaps, my wand doesn't zap. I mean, geez, they're much farther ahead of us than I am.
Well, that's the one thing all experiencers pretty much universally agree upon. They are very advanced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never heard anybody say that there was a stupid race of extraterrestrials, ever, no matter what. Even fiction shows, they're all, you know, smarter than we are and have been around much, much longer than we are. But, you know, we've heard all kinds of stories about UFO encounters, and they're all some of them sound the same depending on who you ask, but there are so many unusual cases, and you wrote about them in the book, and how bizarre the UFO phenomenon can actually be. So after 35 years of investigating, I think you have heard it all, but I'm guessing that's not the case. Is there one instance that among all of these things that totally blew your mind?
Yeah, I would say that is a fair statement.
Yeah.
I think the one that really, there are commonalities to a certain extent.
Right.
I can predict what someone's going to say because, I have been in this field a while. But yeah, that's why I included some of these cases because they totally just, I'm like, what? like one case, which I call Symbols on the Skin, involves this lady by the name of Linda. I met her actually at a MUFON meeting, and I could just, looking at her, we started talking, I could tell she was psychic. She just has this way of looking at you, like she's reading your mind or something. Just a really neat, intelligent lady, very reserved and kind of shy, but we started talking and found out she had encounters, and she agreed to talk about it with me.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a therapist. She herself has gone through therapy because of child abuse issues.
Mm.
And it was very effective, so she became very interested in it and became a therapist herself, and something she really enjoys. But at any rate, her therapist told her that it might be a good idea to try massage therapy because this can bring up suppressed memories and unresolved issues and emotions.
Mm.
So she agreed, and she went to this massage therapist, and it did. It worked really well. And it was during this time, while she was seeing this massage therapist, that strange things started to happen. And what she said was these weird symbols started appearing on her body, often on her legs. And she looked down at, the first time she was looking down at this symbol, and it was clearly meaningful. It looked like a letter, sort of, like Swahili or Sanskrit or Chinese or something.
Yeah.
And she's like, huh. She does have a condition called dermographia, which means her skin's got a lot of histamine in it. If you scratch her, she'll get a big red welt.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought, gosh, did I do this to myself? It doesn't seem possible. It's too complex. And it happened again. And again, it kept happening. So she started to write them down in this little notebook, and she went to the library and started checking out books on symbology to see if, in languages, to see if she could figure out what this meant.
Mm-hmm.
And she got really frustrated because, it wasn't Sanskrit. It wasn't anything she could figure out. It wasn't Chinese. She checked out all kinds of books on ancient symbols. She even ended up going to a messianic temple.
Mm.
She asked her friends. She just searched and searched and searched. And could not find out what these symbols meant. Which was frustrating because they were so obviously meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And after like a year or two, it started to fade off and went away. She thought, okay, when she put her little notebook away, which she had filled up with several pages of these symbols, and kind of forgot about it for years. And then something happened, as it does.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like 10 years later, and she was watching television, and there was this miniseries on called Intruders, which is based on Bud Hopkins' book, of course, called Intruders, about people who've had contact. And it's pretty... I saw the show when it came out. I like it because it's very accurate. It's one of the few shows that's actually, truthful and accurate to what's actually happening to people. And so she's watching it, and there's, at one point, the witnesses in the program are taken on board a craft. Ben Vereen was the actor.
Mm.
And she's watching that scene where he's taken on board, and she's got a real shock. There were these symbols on the wall of the spacecraft on the television. Mm. And she gets a big chill, you know. her hair stands up, her mouth drops open, and these were her symbols. This was what she had seen.
Wow.
And her boyfriend turns to her and says, "Hey, honey, look.
Oh, geez.
Aren't those your symbols?" And she's like, "Yes, oh my God, yes." And she runs and she gets her notebook, and yep, they are very close.
Wow.
So she finally got her answer. These are alien symbols. And it's true. The symbols that were in that miniseries were accurate. They were taken from actual cases.
Ah.
Too
bad nobody could translate them, though.
No, they couldn't. But what it did do is sort of spark memories for her.
Yeah.
Because she had seen UFOs. She did have an interest in the subject, but didn't really think she was personally involved. She had a pretty close-up sighting while driving along the Pacific Coast Highway. She wasn't driving. She was in the front passenger seat. Her friend was.
Mm-hmm.
And she's looking out at the ocean. This is like in the Santa Monica, Malibu area.
Mm-hmm.
She sees this thing on the ocean, this bright, bright light. It didn't look like a boat. It was just this bright light. She's looking at it, trying to figure it out. And finally, she turns to her friend and's like, "Look, would you look at that? Tell me what you think that is." And as soon as he looks, that exact second, this thing takes off straight up and disappears.
Mm.
So almost as if it was reacting to them,
mm-hmm.
or knew that they were watching it, or it was weird. And later she was in Malibu at an outdoor concert with her boyfriend. They saw a UFO dart by, well, move by. It wasn't super fast, but it was below the level of the canyon.
Mm-hmm.
There's pretty steep canyons there. And this was a metallic craft, no wings, silent. It was weird.
Yeah.
But these were just sightings. So now, you know, after she sees these symbols, she starts having memories of being a little girl. And this is when she told me other stuff that I have never heard before.
Mm.
You know, I have heard people describe symbols on their skin. Triangle... You know, three dots, puncture wounds, bruise marks, finger marks kind of in shape like a bruise.
Yeah.
But never complex symbols. So now she starts having what she recalled as dreams, but she thinks they're probably more than dreams. It was a series of them. And all when she was a little girl about 5 years old, where she would see UFOs. One involved what appears to be a complex encounter with human-looking extraterrestrials.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we would call the Nordics.
Mm.
But she was outside her home in this, quote, dream. There's a wheat field next to her home, and someone is standing behind her. And there's this light shining down kind of over them and in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And she says what she was being shown was the landscape going back in time, everything that happened on this one particular spot where this wheat field was.
Hmm.
She's what, you know, kind of like H.G. Wells' Time Machine.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that movie?
I love that movie, yeah.
Yeah, it was a good movie, and it showed the same sort of thing, seasons and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she was watching. She's just a little girl, and she's kept trying to run over and, you know, pick the spring flowers or touch the snow. And all these things, and the being she was with said, "No, don't move, it's dangerous, stay still, don't move."
Mm.
And she kept wanting to run off to it. But very strange, that was one dream. And then she had another around the same time where this UFO was hovering over her house. There's this beam of light covering the whole house. And her mom is ordering her to go back into the house, and Linda's like, "No, I don't want to go in. I don't want to walk through the, quote, time beam again."
Mm.
Whoa, time beam. Because I've never heard that term.
Mm-mm.
You know, I know UFO beams of light can do all kinds of crazy stuff. They levitate people, they paralyze you, they can heal you, transmit information, mm-hmm. burn people. Mm-hmm. And also there are weird time anomalies associated with UFO phenomena. It's not just missing time. Yeah. They can like, I don't want to call it stopping time, but mm-hmm. that's what it looks like. You know, a witness will be hanging out with their family or whatever, and suddenly nobody's moving, mm-hmm. except they can move. And they can telescope time, compress it, extend it, do all kinds of weird stuff. So I think that something along those lines was going on here. These beams of light can affect not only space, but time itself. So it's a really cool case.
That sounds like it. So, you know, after talking to so many people and investigating everything in the UFO realm yourself, do you still reach out to people if you see a write-up or something about them? Or are you so well-known from your books and TV appearances and articles that you're swamped with people asking you for advice, or just maybe they just need to have your shoulder or your ear? Because, you know, people, I think, still are a little bit strange about talking about seeing or experiencing and, you know, ET encounters.
Yeah, I do get a lot of calls from people who just would have a few questions or would really like to share their story, but, you know, please don't write about it. Please mm-hmm. don't tell anyone. I just need someone to talk to. It's always been my first priority to help people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to do it. So, I do get a lot of people calling me because they've read my books, heard me on a show like yours, or saw me on TV, or, you know, heard me speak at a convention.
Mm-hmm.
Came across my website while doing a search for what happened to them. But I do reach out occasionally. One of the cases in the book involves a gentleman I reached out to because I'm so interested in UFO healings.
Uh-huh.
I did a whole book on that.
300
documented cases. A lot of people are being healed. And I read this account online from a gentleman by the name of Dudley Delaney. And he was an elderly gentleman who had described being healed by the ETs. And I reached out to him, was able to contact him, and asked him if he would agree to an interview. He was really surprised and agreed and told me his healing story, which he had briefly mentioned online. And I really wanted his whole story. And he was like, really, really? I'm like, yeah. I want the whole story. You know, tell me it from beginning to end. Because he was an elderly gentleman. He just recently passed away, unfortunately. Mm.
Yeah.
But he has had lifelong encounters, which is usually the case. But his healing was so, so interesting. What happened to him is, you know, he's an elderly gentleman, and this was in, early 2000s, I believe it was,
mm-hmm.
and he had been having problems with his prostate. He's an elderly gentleman, and didn't think there was anything terribly wrong. You know, his prostate was just enlarged, but he fell asleep one evening normally and woke up and was not in his bedroom. He was lying on a table in a small, darkened room and struggled to reach full consciousness and found out at this point he was paralyzed and found himself looking at this little flickering light, which was really the only sort of illumination in the whole room. And it was kind of part of the table that he was lying on. He was lying in a semi-prone position, what he would call what we know as the Sims position,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, lying on your side.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a doctor, by the way.
Ah.
This is significant, and I'll tell you why in just a second.
Okay.
So he's lying there on his side in sort of a semi-prone position. When he slowly became aware that a slender probe was being pushed up inside of him, So I'm talking about the... which does happen.
The infamous anal probe, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So this was happening to him. He wasn't scared. He did not feel any fear. And he says it wasn't painful either. But he could feel this thing move up inside of him, and it was vibrating. And it was, went on for about 5 or 10 minutes. And he could actually see this figure. It was pretty dark, but you could see that it was clothed in white. It was a humanoid, but not human. Kind of looked misshapen. Maybe part alien, part human. But he heard this being tell him very distinctly, "You have a small tumor." And he was being healed. So he was very grateful. He asked the being his name. And the being was reluctant, but he asked again, and finally the being said that his name was June. Which was weird to Dudley, because he's pretty sure this was a male figure.
But,
hey, it's an ET, so...
Yeah, you never know.
At any rate, he kind of drifted off into unconsciousness, and when he awoke, it was the next morning, he felt, quote, different. Immediately remembered what had happened, and found out that his prostate problems subsided.
Wow.
He was able to urinate just fine. So the only conclusion that he could see was that this was an extraterrestrial encounter. And he does have a history of it. Earlier, he remembered a beam of light coming through the roof of his bedroom. And he had an encounter as a little boy, and turns out his niece told him not too long ago that she was having encounters, had a little scar and everything. So we know this tracks families. But what I found real interesting is he's a doctor, right?
Some crackpot.
Yeah, a good witness. But I'm like, I'm getting a lot of doctors describing encounters, healings in particular.
Yeah,
I started looking at who's being healed and why. And I found that there is a pattern. Yes, it does involve people who, are being tracked in their families, at least 50% of cases. But it's evenly divided between men and women. Age isn't a factor. Religion, political affiliation, none of that. What it is your profession, your job. People who are doing good work for humanity in some way are people who are being healed. Doctors, artists, social workers. Oh, my God, social workers. Human rights activists, inventors, police officers, musicians. These are the people who are having contact. Which to me is encouraging. This shows that the ETs are contacting people who are helping other people. So they're helping people who are helping humanity. And that's a good sign.
And that truly is. I mean, because you hear all the negative stuff. I have a question from the chat room. She wants to know if anyone has ever taken a souvenir from a ship or an encounter and then maybe had it disappear afterwards.
Certainly. It's very, very difficult to do. I did a whole study on this, and there's a few cases where people tried to steal something and were caught. In fact, the very first case that of a recorded abduction that we know of, Antonio V.S. Boas, tried to grab an object, and boy, were the ETs mad. They pushed him over and escorted him off the craft immediately.
Kicked him out? In the space?
No.
Send him back home. Yes, I know. I just have this crazy mental picture for just 1 second.
People have... I mean, the case of Betty Andreasen is a good example. They gave her this little kind of blue book and told her that don't show it to anybody. It's only for you because you've reached a certain level of spiritual maturity that you're able to view this. She said it had weird symbols in it and glowing pages. It wasn't a normal book like we would think of it. Mm-hmm. And she had it for like 2 weeks and then it disappeared. Other people have had actual artifacts. Like two kids, they were taken on board and they gave the ETs their flashlight and the ETs gave them a flashlight, an ET flashlight. Showed them how to operate and everything. Mm-hmm. They walked out of the UFO, they were running home, and they were accosted by the military, and the military took it from them.
Ah.
And this happens fairly frequently. This happened to another gentleman who got a bar of metal. He was told he was going to get a gift, and that it would appear in his room, and it did. It was this sort of bar of lead, really shiny.
Mm-hmm.
Grabbed it and drove off to Constance Clear's office. That's his researcher, therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And he was accosted by the men in black on the way there. He threatened and took the artifact. But some people get to keep it. You know, people have kept little stones and crystals. And there was another guy who had a metal bar. One lady was given crystals and the military came and took it. That's often what happens. The men in black are... military guys show up and take it.
It's interesting. We have to take, which is really interesting, the half hour is already gone, like in the blink of an eye. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk about the cat aliens.
Ah, yeah.
Because there's a lot of people in the chat room right now that are really cat people. So I think a cat alien story will be very well received. So everybody hang on, go get a saucer of milk and you know, if you're thirsty, and we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Don't go away. There's more Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks right after these important messages.
It's that time of year again, my pagan and witchy folks. Time for Witches Fest USA, a pagan fair where we gather dressed as magical folk we love, like fays, elves, sprites, and more. There will be mystical vendors, enchanting performers, and magical presenters of all kinds, paths, and traditions. The fair runs from July 9th through the 11th. On Saturday, July 10th, you can come in person to spend the day on Astor Place in New York City and enjoy free workshops, live performances, vendors, and presenters. Friday and Saturday will be streaming online to the world stage. There are over 95 workshops to choose from in real time or view them on demand at your convenience. For information and registration, go to www.witchesfestusa.org. That's WITCHSFEST USA.org. Get caught up in the magic and enjoy.
Hey everyone, it's Marla. If you like tonight's episode of Stirring the Cauldron and the archive podcast as well, take a look at the show's YouTube channel and check out the dozens of shows that are there just waiting to be heard. New shows are added each week, and while you're there, why not subscribe? It's free. And if you click on that tiny little bell icon at the top of the page, you'll be notified when new shows are available. Just go to youtube.com and then type in Stirring the Cauldron Para X and the link will appear. Just like magic.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hi, obviously we're back, and I just want to say one thing about Witches Fest, on that commercial. Nicholas Pearson and I are going to be doing a workshop on Friday, January 9th online about crystal divination and the Witches Oracle deck. And there's also people that we know, a lot of my guests from the show are going to be doing things like that too, workshops and stuff. Amy Blackthorne and... Anwen Avalon, you know, the Water Witch, and just so many people that have been guests here, they're all doing that. So look it up if you're interested, and if you're in the New York area, you can go there on Saturday. It's for, you can actually be there, and the rest of us are just doing it online. So, all right, just wanted to throw that in. Now, we are going to talk about cat aliens because there are several sightings, I don't know exactly what you would call them, but there was a cat alien story, and I want to talk about this too afterwards, that talks about sleep paralysis. But let's talk about cat aliens first, and then we'll get into the other part of it.
Yeah, this ought to stir the cauldron a little bit.
Hey, that's what I'm here for.
Yeah, this was a strange case, because it's not your typical Grays. That was somewhat similar. Began in 1956 to a 12-year-old boy who does not want his name used. He's now an adult, of course. But he lived in Haver, Montana, and was out ice skating with his friends, and this UFO appeared. Just kind of went across the sky. He had never heard of UFOs, neither had his friends. You know, he's just a little kid. And thought, that's strange. And it was shortly after he saw this when something started coming into his bedroom. He had his own room in the basement of the house. His little brother was super envious, by the way, which becomes part of this story in a weird way. But at any rate, he woke up one evening and saw this short figure with enormous dark eyes standing next to his bed, and it looked to him like a large, hairless cat with a skinny human body, sort of a humanoid cat. It didn't have, you know, cat ears, but the cat eyes and the cat-shaped face. It was very scary. His entire body became paralyzed as this thing started moving closer and closer to him. He tried to scream, couldn't make a sound, and at some point lost consciousness. And he woke up in the morning wondering if it was just a dream, but it wasn't long before it happened again, and again and again and again. And he would always feel paralyzed, and would see this cat-like face with these huge eyes. And this went on for 4 years until he was about 16 years old, and then stopped. And he grew up, became an adult, found a girlfriend, fell in love with her. They got married. She was from Nevada, so they moved down to Nevada. And one day they're watching TV, and this show about UFOs comes on, and abductions and stuff like this. And he says, "Hey, you know, honey, I saw those when I was a little boy. I think I saw aliens." She's like, "Really? That's interesting, because so did I. When I was a little girl, I would see this cat-like face coming through the wall at me." And she's like, "What? Cat?" And she's like, yeah, my parents never believed me. They thought I was having a nightmare, but I know I wasn't. I was awake. So apparently they were seeing the same type of beings. And it was around this time that they started seeing UFOs, 1992 or so. And these UFOs were hovering over their house. And he would grab his camera and try to take a picture of it, and every time he brought his camera up, it would dart away. It's getting very frustrating. She saw the UFOs too. And then one evening, she was very anxious, very restless. She felt like something was going to happen. And he woke up, and here were these cat people again. And he screamed at them, "Go away, go away. I don't give you permission. Get out of here." And just had a battle of wills that went on for quite some time. And he eventually won, I guess, because they did go away. And woke up the next morning, went to work, didn't tell his wife at first. She had a very, very restless night. And he came home and told her. And she's like, "Oh, my God." And that was apparently the last visit. 2 weeks later, they did come back, that's right. And he told them to go away. He didn't feel any real fear, but he just didn't want to have these experiences. And they had a few weird apparitions appear in their house. And after that, apparently they were gone. But there's a weird endnote to all of this. They invited his brother over, his little brother, and subject of UFOs came up, and he told his little brother, you know, when I was down in the basement, something weird happened. I think I saw aliens. And his little brother said, oh, something happened to me, too. Because after he had moved out, the little brother finally got the basement room. He was so happy. And he wasn't down there for 15 minutes when he said something really scary appeared. And the guy interviewed and asked him, well, what did you see? And his little brother refused to talk about it. All he would say, it was very, very scary. I don't know what it was, but it was horrible. So presumably he saw the same thing. I don't know. But it's such an interesting case because like three other cases in the book, it involves witnesses who are apparently brought together in some weird way. Because they both saw cat-like aliens as little children. That's weird. I don't know if this is an extraterrestrial dating service that's bringing people together or what's going on here. But this is a pattern. This is something that does occur. It's very strange. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. It went burbly for a minute. But, you know, we've heard about gray aliens and reptilians and insect-like aliens and Pleiadians and even little green men from Mars. But we've never, you know, ever heard of a cat alien. And there was a question in the chat room, are there other kind of animal-type aliens that we could recognize like a bear or something? And do they speak to humans? That's a chat room question.
Yeah, I love this question because I sure wonder about that. Because people like often will describe the grays as like almost ant-like. I've heard that a few times.
Uh-huh.
And of course, we do have praying mantis, which is weird.
Yeah.
That's weird to me because, you know, why praying mantis? Why not ladybug?
Exactly.
Why not potato bug? Though I did hear a person said they saw a being like a potato bug.
Ew.
But I have heard cat-like a few times. I heard one about very dog-like. I have one or two cases involving this is rat men or rat-like beings. but never. We don't. One. Yeah, there is one involving horse-like beings.
Mm.
But bear? No, I haven't heard bear. Snake-like, reptilian, of course.
Well, yeah.
But. No, most animals aren't really represented. I'm sure that they're out there. It's a big universe. But no, I get mostly grays, over 50% grays. It's grays, praying mantis, human-looking, and strange humanoids. Light beings, tall whites, hairy dwarves, robot-like beings, but always humanoid. Always arms and legs, you know, a head. Eyes, well, almost always eyes. Sometimes the face is blank, but people don't perceive it. But animal-like aliens are relatively rare. A bird, I will say that there are some people who have described bird-like beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And there's a comment in the chat room that ancient Egypt idolized cats, so maybe they were alien cats.
Right. I've thought about that, too. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
The number of people have described cat-like faces.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps there's something to that. Just here's a weird aside, a little tangent. I was talking to one lady from Maine. I call her Lynette. She's in one of my other books.
Mm-hmm.
But the ETs told her that not only have they been manipulating human genetics for millennia, what we thought were angels were really them, and gave her a bunch of, they gave her a lot of information. I could go on and on about her case. They told her that they have manipulated the genetics, get this, of dogs and cats to boost their emotional intelligence to make them relate better to human beings.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird. Wow. Because look at what we have. You know, they're our most popular pets, and they do have very complex emotions.
Yeah, and there's some sinister, sneaky about them sometimes, too.
yeah,
not all cats. Of them are like, you know, some of them are, you know. So, yeah, it makes you wonder sometimes if they are alien or not. There was another question, and now I've lost it. So I'll look for that, but let's talk about something else for a second. I want to talk about the people that wake up and it's a sleep paralysis kind of thing, because that's really a controversial subject. It seems to be a common denominator on some of, like we were talking about, alien encounters. But I've had people on my shows talking about sleep paralysis as nothing to do with aliens, but as a phenomenon that, like the old hag syndrome, it's just actually what they're saying is a timing misstep in your sleep cycle. It happens when your mind wakes up while your body is still in temporary paralysis of REM sleep.
Right. Yeah.
So, I've
researched it, you know, intensely, because I've had sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
I do a lot of meditation and lucid dreaming and out-of-body stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are in the dream state, your brain releases a chemical that essentially paralyzes you,
mm-hmm.
so that you don't act out your dreams. People mm-hmm. who, you know, sleepwalk don't release enough of this chemical. Mm-hmm. And sleep paralysis can mimic, in some ways, a UFO encounter. Because what will happen is you'll wake up and you're in a sort of a waking dream. You can't move, and there are people around you or mm-hmm. beings.
Mm-hmm. And you
sense that you're in a different place. But it's not a UFO encounter. It's not the same thing. It doesn't explain how people are being healed or implanted or why they're not in bed when they're being mm-hmm. abducted. It does not explain UFO abductions, period. That's a very important point, because this is what skeptics will say. Mm-hmm. It's just sleep paralysis. I'm like, hold on there. No, no, no. Sleep paralysis will not leave you with a puncture wound. It will not heal you of a chronic illness. It does not remove you from your bed. And there are multiple witness cases at any rate. So, yeah, but sleep paralysis is definitely a real phenomenon. The mm-hmm. ETs, they can paralyze people, and they use, I think, actually, mental abilities. They don't need an instrument to do this. They can just sort of do it with willpower. They're very, very telepathic. They're mm-hmm. excellent hypnotists. They can erase your memory. I've had mm-hmm. a lot of people describe this pressure that comes down. One lady, she saw Gray looking in through her window at her little newborn baby. They often come when you're, you know, just had your baby or 9 months pregnant.
Mm.
And she was jumped up. She was about to jump up and run to scoop up her baby, and she was slammed down into the bed by this paralyzing force. So, yeah, they can do that.
Wow. Another thing, we were talking about dreams, and someone in the chat room said that she saw a reptilian walking upright wearing a uniform in a dream. So that kind of makes me wonder, can they get into our dreams?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and this can mean different things. Because what happens is they can communicate through the dream state. It's actually one of the ways they do contact people, because it's less traumatic for people. Mm-hmm. It's a way to sort of reach out to them, because they are very telepathic, and this is a way to communicate with people in the dream state. And mm-hmm. this is definitely a question I ask people who are having encounters. Like, have you had a close-up UFO sighting? Do you have any unexplained illnesses or healings?
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about the UFO phenomenon? Does it make you anxious? Are you obsessed with it? Now, there's a bunch of questions you're asked. How do you feel mm-hmm. about clowns? And one of the questions asked is, do you have UFO dreams, alien dreams? And by and large, people who are having experiences will say, oh yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. So this can be a reflection of your own contact. It can also be, and this is absolutely true, a memory. This is how people will recall an encounter. They will say, have a UFO sighting with missing time, and that night they dream about it. They dream it. They dream what happened. So it can be a real, honest-to-God memory, an accurate memory recall, or just an out-of-body-like encounter. They will pull you out of your body and take you on board a craft and will remember it as a dream. So there's all sorts of different ways of looking at this, but all of them reflect actual contact.
Do you think that they, you know, people talk about the astral plane a lot and astral projection. Are they privy to the astral realm as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they absolutely are. They've got a very good understanding of the astral realms. People have had near-death experiences and saw aliens on the other side. It's super rare, but it does happen. And being taken on board a UFO is, in some ways, like going up to the astral plane. I think that that's sort of where they're flying around in. I've had a bunch of out-of-body experiences myself. I wrote a book about it. This is something I'm super into. And a lot of contactees have this ability, which makes me wonder about myself. But at any rate, yeah, I was having an out-of-body experience once, and I'm flying over to the other side, what I would call the other side. And it's kind of this foggy realm between the dimensions. And I saw these eyes looking at me way up ahead. And I'm like, huh, what's that? And I go zooming by, and boy, I got a real, you know, I was startled for a second. Because as I came up alongside this thing, it was a gray alien looking at me. I'm like, whoa, oh my God. I wouldn't say that it scared me, but certainly, yeah, startled me. And I kept going. I just kept moving along.
Yeah, it's kind of like, nice seeing you, bye. You know,
keep just passing through.
Yeah, I know. That's got to be kind of strange. You know, there's so many things that I've written down that we should talk about, but we can't, but because of time. But one thing that kind of got to me as we're winding down, I've read that it's easy enough to call a UFO down. And in one of your chapters, the guy was out camping in the Canadian wilderness, and he tried it, not with lights or instruments of any kind, but he meditated, and he sent his consciousness out, visually kind of imagining where his location is, and he got a response from an alien. So what are your thoughts about that? I mean, have lots of people that you've interviewed and written been able to call aliens down? And is it really that easy?
Yeah, it's remarkably easy. I've done it myself. I joined Stephen Greer's group, C-SETI, years ago. I knew of other cases where this has happened. And we went out on our first night. I could not believe it. We called down a UFO.
Wow.
And we did it a bunch of times. In fact, I did it for the show Encounters. We brought a whole TV crew, and sure enough, one showed up. Same for the Learning Channel. Yes, you can do this. I've taught people how to do it. The CE5 protocols are pretty well known. It does involve meditation, sort of visualizations. You can blink a little flashlight. It absolutely works. Yeah, it worked for this gentleman in the book. He saw UFOs twice in 2013, right after doing it. And it was a year later that he had a really crazy encounter on Wasaga Beach. This is up in Canada, world's largest freshwater beach. And saw three 10-foot-tall ETs. His friends saw them too. It wasn't just him seeing them. But yeah, it was a pretty scary encounter for him, actually, because these guys were large.
Well, that was what I was going to say, and I brought it up because isn't that, okay, suppose you can, you know, and you're saying you can, isn't that opening like a Pandora's box? Because you don't know who you're calling down. You know, it's like, you know, don't ever in witchcraft, it's don't ever call anybody that you can't banish. You know, don't call somebody over if you can't get rid of them, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So isn't that kind of dangerous to do that?
Well, I don't know of anyone who's been hurt as a result of CE5 work.
Okay.
I know people have been freaked out because the UFO does show up.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, this is funny. The show Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Uh-huh.
They actually called me, and I did a little segment with them for their show on how to call down UFOs. Showed them how to do it, and they did. They did it, and it worked. And they went running inside when this little light showed up.
I'm surprised they didn't. The Kardashians didn't scare the ETs. On that happy note, and I'm sounding snarky, we got to go. But give everybody a website so people can get over there and see all the good stuff you have and follow you and all that good stuff.
Oh, thanks, Marla. Yeah, I appreciate it. I do have a website. If you just use a search engine on my name, it should take you there. It's PrestonDennett.Weebly.com. I've got all my books there. You can contact me through my website. Also on Facebook and Twitter. Got a new YouTube channel, which I'm putting out research.
Oh, what's that called? Where'd they find that?
It's called, type in my name, it should take you there. It's UFOs and the Paranormal with Preston Dennett.
Okay.
And, I think this is an important subject, and I think it's going to change. We're going to have open official contact. We're having disclosure right now. So this is something that is going to be mainstream at some point, and I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to find out, because all the times that everybody's, you know, kept it hush-hush, and so now if they're copping to it, it is definitely going to be interesting. All right, well, we are going to take off now, not in a saucer, not anywhere, you know, we're just going to, you know, go back to normal, our regularly scheduled life. But thank you so much for being on there. It's always a pleasure. You're always really interesting, and we're going to do it again.
Awesome. Thanks, Marla. Always a pleasure.
Thanks. And thank you all for listening in tonight. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2024. The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompetech.com.